by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Person for today. So if I could all get you to join in with the serenity prayer, that'd be great. Don't need to stand up.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Great. Okay, well, what I'll do now is I'll read the preamble to Alcoholics Anonymous that tells you a little bit about what AA is and also what AA isn't. So, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Is that right? Yes. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And we're very lucky in the studio today. We've got a group from Wednesday Night Steps and Traditions, which is a group that meets on Wednesday nights, funnily enough, at 7:30 at the Thorndon Ace ATRO building on 192 Tinakori Road in Thorndon in Wellington. So welcome, guys. So we're just going to go around and share our experience, strength and hope as it relates to our alcoholism. So I think I'll ask Daniel to kick off the sharing things.
Hi, my name's Daniel and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Daniel.
I drank for 30 years and 10 of them were fun, 10 of them were difficult and 10 of them were hell. And I guess towards the end of the 10 that were fun, I got posted out to the Middle East. I went to live in Dubai, got a nice house on the beach in front of what is now Palm Island, and I thought the world was my oyster. And it was. And then I got working with a guy who was about sort of 45 years of age and looked about 70. And his typical day was waking up in the morning at 4 o'clock with the sweats and the shakes. And then he'd be the first one into the office at 6 o'clock so he could get his hand down into the bottom right hand corner for the gin bottle to get to stop the shakes. And then, he'd disappear off about 8 o'clock round town, get loaded up with some more. And then he'd be the first one up to our contractors club, which we had a bar where you could have a sandwich at lunchtime. And he'd have 3 or 4 gin lime sodas just to keep them going for a little bit more. And then he'd be back in the office and he'd be the first one back up after work at about 4 o'clock. And he'd be straight into the gin lime, bigger gin lime sodas as well. And we'd get up about 4:30, 5 o'clock or something when the office finished. And around about 5:30, he was on his way out. And the sun used to go down in that part of the world pretty quickly, always around about 6 o'clock. And we used to take the mickey out of him. We used to say, John, you be careful now, you'll miss the green flash when the sun goes down. And, of course, he always missed the green flash because he always used to pass out before the sun went down. And one of the stewards in the bar and his wife would then collect him, throw him in the back of the car. And then off he'd go back home and he'd be tipped into bed and he'd wake up again the following morning at 4 o'clock with the sweats and the shakes and the screaming abdabs. And I remember saying to myself at the time, shit, I hope that never happens to me. Well, if you roll the camera forward 20 years, that was probably where I was at, more or less, with alcohol, except I didn't have the wife to tip me into the back of the car. She'd gone by then. And eventually, I won't tell you the whole story of the downfall, but the moment of truth for me came when I'd been a daily drinker for most of my life, And in the end, I was also going on benders for 3 or 4 or 5 days at a time and found it very difficult to stop drinking, although I could. And I remember waking up on one of these benders and I looked at my watch and it was 2 o'clock. And I didn't know whether it was 2 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And at that moment in time, I suddenly realised something that was profound. Well, it was profoundly frightening, actually. I realised that the moment had arrived where I couldn't live with alcohol and I couldn't live without it either. And I was willing to do whatever needed to be done. And eventually I got to see somebody who was a fund holder for a treatment centre. Well, she was a fund holder for alcohol and drugs treatment in Stockport in England, the north of England. And she said, Daniel, she said, I think you ought to go to treatment. And I said, I thought to myself, well, you know, if she says, Daniel, you've got to go to the moon, I'd have to ask when's the first rocket, because I'd had enough. And I did go into a treatment centre down. Fortunately for me, it was a 12-step treatment centre where they introduced me to the steps. And when I got out, I continued with sticking very close to AA, 4 or 5 meetings a week, sometimes more. Not so much nowadays, but I do go to meeting. I've got a home group, and I go to probably one or two meetings a week. And but the difference is that, and what I learnt actually, particularly, was from the doctor's opinion, because he was very clear about what the problem was. That on the one hand, once we ingested alcohol, we couldn't stop drinking. And then once we had drunk ourselves to a point where we couldn't drink anymore, and then came out of that, we were continuously irritable, discontent and restless, until once again we could take that irritability, discontent and restlessness away with another drink. So it was a completely vicious circle. And our founders realised this, when Bill in particular was treated by this man for some years. But unfortunately the doctor didn't have the solution. He knew what the problem was, but he didn't have the solution. And through various stages and steps, what came about was the 12 steps, which is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I discovered was that it was the 12 steps that actually took away the irritability, discontent and restlessness to a degree where I could live daily without the need to drink alcohol. And that was really the secret of success. It was those 12 steps that enabled me to change so that I did not have to drink anymore. And it was really quite simple, but also difficult. And it was hard to get and stay sober. But what I realised after some time, this is all in retrospect now, of course, was that the real problem that I had was not stopping drinking. I could actually stop drinking, even if it meant I had to take diazepam or I had to go into a detox centre for a week or whatever it was. I could actually stop drinking. The problem was I couldn't stop starting again. And what I didn't realise for a very long time was that that is actually what this programme is all about. It is not to stop you drinking, it is to stop you starting drinking again, because the 12 steps are able to deal with the irritability, discontent and restlessness, which are the cause of my downfall. And I found that this programme is the key to living again. AA is a very important part of my life. It is, however, only part of my life. I now have, I'm here today. I don't normally able to get to this community services thing on a Saturday morning, because I've got a 12-year-old boy and he loves playing rugby. He's never seen me drinking, but he's on school holidays at the moment. You know, I've got another child. She's seven years of age. They just have never seen that side of my life. And when the time is right, I'll talk to them about it, and particularly my boy now that he's getting a bit older. But that's the miracle of this, you see, is that I've been given the opportunity to live a normal life without the need to drink alcohol. And I found that this program over a long period of time, can change the way I feel, such that I don't need to drink alcohol. But I do accept entirely that alcohol can change the way I feel instantly. The program changes the way I feel over a period of time, because it takes away that irritability, discontent and restlessness, which was the ruination of my life. So I think I shall stop now and pass it on to the next person.
Right. Thanks, Daniel.
Thanks, Daniel.
You're listening to Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. And so we've got live in the studio a group from Wednesday Night Steps and Traditions, all four home group members. So it's quite a privilege to have you guys here. And I was at your meeting on Wednesday. It was great, really good meeting. So if you're listening and you want to get in touch with Alcoholics Anonymous in New Zealand, what you can do is go onto Alcoholics Anonymous website, which is aa.org.nz, and there's information on there about alcoholism and about meetings as well, the different meetings wherever you are in New Zealand. So click onto meetings and have a look there. While you're there, while you're hovering over the meetings button, you can go down to meetings on air, and if you click on that, which I've just done now, it'll take you to a list of these meetings, podcasts of them. And some of them are from Wellington, some of them are from this studio here, which we publish every 4 weeks. And some of them are from Auckland, which they have weekly meetings up there. And their meetings are half an hour, our ones are about 43 minutes. So there's a lot of resource on there from different members of Alcoholics Anonymous, basically sharing their experience, strength and hope, just like we're doing today. So, and also on the website is our phone number as well. So if you'd like to speak to someone from AA, a real live alcoholic who's now recovered, then you can ring 0800 229 6757. And that number is covered 24 hours a day. So if you feel like, you know, 11 o'clock in the morning, you want to talk to an alcoholic, a recovered one, and find out a bit more about AA, or find out where your nearest meeting is, then ring that number, which is 0800 229 6757. And the same applies if you get the urge at 2 a.m. because there'll be someone there to answer the phone there for you as well. So, all right, well, what we'll do now is we'll carry on with the sharing. So, John, would you like to share?
Yeah, sure. My name's John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
I don't think I was an alcoholic until I came to AA. It's one of those things that your eyes are opened, and my eyes were opened to my problem, I think, by actually coming to AA. But I knew there was some issue that I had to deal with. I thought I probably needed to moderate my drinking, but in fact what I had to do was to stop. And I suppose the reason that I got to that point was I think it was that terrible, terrible day that we have here in New Zealand of Good Friday, when you cannot buy alcohol. And it was a realization on that day that I hadn't actually got alcohol into the house, and what was I going to do? Fortunately, my wife had been making cosmetics, and she'd been using vodka in the cosmetics. And would you believe it, I ended up drinking vodka with orange juice, something which I never drink. But I realized then that it wasn't the taste of the drink, it wasn't anything, it was just the effect it had on me that I was looking for. And that sort of was a point for me. I think that was the point for me when I realized I need to do something about it. I was functioning at work. I probably could have functioned better, but I was functioning as well as some people were, that's for sure. And you know, there wasn't really a crisis as such, but the crisis was that this, you know, something had got a hold of me, and it wasn't going to let me go. And the other thing that I felt at the time as well was my spirit was lost as well. You know, the whole, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, your mojo, whatever, it just been taken away by the drink, and there wasn't that spark of John that there used to be, and it just got hold of me. So I mean, I went along to a meeting. I can't say it was an immediate success for me, quite frankly, because I carried on drinking. And I'm not sure this is the best story to tell you guys, but I'll tell it anyway. I carried on going to a meeting, and someone at the meeting beforehand said to me, how's it going? I said, well, not as well as it could be, you know, I'm still drinking. And this guy said to me, well, why are you coming to this meeting then? And I thought, oh, sod you. And I can remember seething through this this meeting with this total resentment against this guy who said this to me, and thinking, right, just wait till I get home, I'm going to get absolutely slaughtered. And I was sort of thinking like this, thinking, yeah, I'll show you. And I thought, no, damn it, I'm going to go home, I'm going to stay sober. And to be honest, that's probably not the best introduction to AA, but from that point, I wish I had a better story to tell you, I have stayed sober, and that was over 4 years ago now. And I think what I've had to do, though, is do some work since then. I don't think resentment's enough to keep me sober, but actually the 12 steps have been that, and going to a 12-step meeting has been really, really helpful, because I'm afraid I've done everything as badly as you possibly could do. And as a result of going to the 12-step meeting, it just kept sort of realigning me and realigning me to what I needed to do. And going through the steps that we have has been just what I needed as an alcoholic, because certainly I was a difficult case, I think, and probably difficult because I can't come up with the stories of being in a detox unit. I can't come up with the stories of being passing out at half five and this side of things. But I still recognise that it had a hold over me, that drink had a hold over me. And as Daniel said, I just could not stop starting drinking again once I'd stopped. And so I'm very grateful to having the home group that I have, and very grateful to be able to pass this message on to other people as well. Thank you.
That's great. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Tim.
You're listening to Wellington Access Radio 783 AM. This is Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. And we've got Wednesday night steps and traditions. And the home group members here today sharing their experience, strength and hope as it relates to alcoholism. Now, this radio show has its own Facebook page, which is AA on Air Wellington. And on there, they've got little bits of information about upcoming meetings. And we're also on iTunes. So there's a link on our Facebook page on AA on Air Wellington. There's a link to take you to iTunes, and you can download other such meetings such as this, and you know, listen to them from your portable device or at home, wherever you are. So it's a great way of sort of carrying the message as well. So what I'll do now is I think we'll just carry on with the sharing. So Mandy, would you like to share?
Thank you. Hi, I'm Mandy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mandy.
A sad day morning and not be hungover or in someone else's bed in another town, probably given a different name. I always use different names, or was always trying to reinvent myself, was always running away, was completely driven by fear and made decisions based on what I didn't want. I don't want to live here, I don't want this job, I don't like that person. And my whole life drinking was spent in fear and running away from what I thought were my circumstantial problems. I had absolutely no idea that I was the problem, that my drinking had, you know, taken over my whole entire life. For me, at that time when I was drinking, it felt like the solution to my problems. It felt like, you know, if you had my life, you'd drink. If you felt the way I did and things happened to you that happened to me, you would drink too. And I found it was my solution to everything. Every little problem that came into my life, any little feeling, I would just drink it away. I would just stuff my feelings and just drink it away. And consequently, I felt lost out there. I felt isolated. I did feel different. And I hung out with so many different crowds of people, and I would just sort of take on a role. You know, I'd see something on TV and just take on that role the next day and play that character and think that's what people wanted from me. And so, you know, drinking enabled me to be who I thought others wanted me to be, because I had no idea who I was. And I knew I wasn't enough, so just being me was not going to work. So drinking worked for about 17 years, and then it turned, and I don't know when it turned, but it became binging to more like a daily thing, where at some point each day I needed to be out of it. I needed to not feel or think, or, you know, I needed something in my system. And then it kind of got a hold of my mental thinking, and I was thinking about it, I was obsessing about it, I was, you know, drinking it, I was recovering from it. It became kind of a 24-hour thing, and everything was based on my drinking, the type of work I did, the people I hung out with, and my standards dropped, basically. You know, not that I thought that I had high standards to begin with, but, you know, I just kept drawing lines in the sand. Oh, well, I'm not going to do that. If that happens, I'll stop drinking. If I drive drunk, if I do this, if I do that. I was always bargaining with myself all the time. Oh, my God, that fucking happened. Okay, I better not do that. And, yeah, sorry about that. I was not going to swear. I do get Tourette's. So consequently, yeah, I ended up in AA. That was a series of events. It had nothing to do with me. I did not ask for help. I did not pick up the phone. I was in huge denial. I didn't think that it was my drinking. I thought, you know, I'd come back around the world again. I'd been overseas. You know, I'm burnt out. I had a backpack full of old clothes. I'm in my early 30s, and I'm just not travelling well. Got no job, no money, barely hanging on to a relationship. And someone healthier than me intervened, and then, you know, a few family members intervened, and one thing led to another, and I ended up taking a car that was didn't have a warrant, didn't have a registration to my first meeting, and I thought that was normal. And, it really, to be honest, it was old men. There was about five old men, and they gave me a big book, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thought, oh, my God, I can't, well, why are they giving me that? I can't read that in a week, because he said, oh, well, we'll see you next week. I thought, well, gee, I can't read this book in a week. And I brought it back, and what happened is he said, no, you need to keep that. He said, you need to keep that book, you know, you'll need that. That's, you know, that's your sort of roadmap for living. And anyway, my journey began. It took me a couple of years in and out of meetings to, you know, get sober. I kept drinking, going to meetings, and eventually I surrendered completely to the program. I'd been, you know, on another bender, nothing unusual had happened, just another bender, another time I didn't turn up to work, another time I was drunk, another time I was unreliable, didn't get home, etc., etc. And I surrendered, and I remember ringing this woman in AA, and I, that was it, I was stuffed. And she said, I'm not going to give you private tuition, Mandy. You need to get back to the meetings. You need to do the steps. You need to get that big book. Come round to my house. And, you know, you need to get serious, because you're not well. You're sick. You're a sick person trying to get well. You know, you're not a bad person trying to get good. And from that moment when she talked about the physical allergy and the mental obsession that it talks about in the big book, I started to understand I had this disease. That, you know, I was drinking against my will. I was drinking because, as soon as I put one drink in, I can't guarantee my actions. You know, I'm allergic to alcohol, and because of that allergy, I continue to drink. And so I got well. You know, I started to get well, and things started to get good. I got, you know, a dream job, a company vehicle, pay rises. I had a child in sobriety. I still had my same relationship. And everything was going well, and I was kind of mechanically doing this program for a long time, living on step one and step 12. And really, I had another emotional rock bottom, and I had to go deeper in the steps, and I had to really, you know, get God on board, I guess is what I'm saying. This program is spiritual, and I needed to have, you know, some spiritual solutions to my alcoholism. And so building that relationship with a higher power sort of started after about 10 years of being in this program. And that's what I try and do today. You know, I try and go from the head to the heart, that journey from the head to the heart through working the steps, sponsoring others, going to meetings, and just doing the things that are suggested, really. And when I do that, you know, I have a good life today. You know, I'm able to turn up to work. I'm able to be reliable. You know, if I'm going to be somewhere, I say, yeah, I'm going to be there, and I turn up and I do what I say I'm going to do. And that was never, ever the case drinking. You know, I couldn't follow a cooking recipe, so I wouldn't do it. You know, I can't run a bath. You know, that sort of stuff. Couldn't organise a decent lolly scramble. You know, those are the things I couldn't do. And I can do that today. You know, I can, you know, take my child to netball on a Saturday morning and not be a complete lunatic about it. You know, actually just stand there with some oranges. And, you know, these are just things that were out of my grasp when I was drinking. I'd sit on a bar stool, crack a joke, fall off, and my life was just sad and out of control. So, you know, I'm really grateful to be here and grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous for giving me the life that I could only dream of, and now I'm actually living it. Thanks.
Thanks, Mandy. You're listening to Wellington Access Radio, 7:03 AM, and we've got people from Wednesday Night Steps and Traditions sharing their experience, strength and hope as it relates to their own alcoholism. So let's keep going with the sharing. So, Lynette, would you like to share?
Hi, my name's Lynette and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lynette.
You know, it's a privilege to be sitting here today. I related to, you know, the beginning of Daniel's story. I was a 30-year drinker. 10 were fun, 10 were okay, and the last 10 were hideous. I came into this program late at 47. My drinking started as just a lot of fun, really, back in the late 70s, early 80s. That's what everyone did at their workplaces. Very acceptable to drink at lunchtime and not come back to work, and people partied hard, and that's what we did, and everybody did it, so I didn't seem different. And then as time went on, my drinking, you know, it just got worse. It was a weekend, and then they weren't weekends, and then over a period of time, Wednesday was a good idea because it was the middle of the week, and everybody did that, so that was all right. The Wednesdays became the Thursdays. As time went on, you know, I thought, well, Monday's not bad. And eventually, you know, down the track, and that's progressive, you know, this is a progressive disease, and that's what it did to me. Eventually, I became that daily drinker. Eventually, I drank every single day of the week, and I drank because I needed to, but I didn't know that. I thought I drank because I was useless, worthless, and hopeless, and couldn't cope with my problems in life. You know, I felt like I had hundreds of problems, you know, that the kids were a problem, my health was a problem, my husband was a problem. You know, I had bad schooling, I didn't have opportunities. I was, you know, look, everything I could find, there was always a reason to drink. You know, I had no friends, I had too many friends. You know, I was too tall, I was too short, I was too fat, I was too skinny. It didn't really matter. I would make something up, and then I think, I can't cope, I need to drink. And I just can't believe that I sort of ended up like that. You know, I can't believe that my weekend drinking, like everybody else, turned to this where I would, I raised children as a practicing alcoholic. I couldn't work, of course, because, I couldn't hold down a job. But, you know, my excuse was I needed to stay home to look after the kids. My kids were well cared for, but they were certainly put in danger at many times of their life. Because drinking just took over, you know, it was my whole being. I lived and breathed to drink, and I understand what John said, you know, that brought back Good Friday. You know, no drink, and it was like, holy hell. what am I going to do? Where am I going to buy it? And I remember I was staying with my dad, and he had this Galliano that was in his cupboard that I think had been there for God knows how long, because my father didn't drink it. And that was all I drank, and I drank some Galliano, quite a lot of Galliano, and, you know, I was violently ill. But as John said, it wasn't because I wanted to have a drink and relax and be sociable. It's I needed a drink because my head was ready to explode, and I thought I'd jump off a cliff, you know. So the alternative was I either need to have a drink or I'm going to be mentally insane and just kill myself. So I drank whatever was available, and, you know, as soon as I had that first sip, that's what sets me off. You know, I have that's this whole thing is I have that first drink, and that gives me that ease and comfort. You know, I think this is what I needed. I feel fine now. I'll just have one more. You know, by the time I'd had three or four, I got past feeling normal, and then I just carried on drinking. And then I'd be, you know, comatose. I'd fall over. And my kids would have to put me to bed, and I'd start wake up the next morning feeling very remorseful, hungover, you know, puffing on the cigarettes, drinking the coffee, hands shaking, thinking I'm never going to do this again. And then 3 o'clock would roll around, and, oh, guess what? I thought, need a drink. And the whole process just started again. And, you know, by that stage I was hiding the alcohol in, you know, in bottles, in water bottles, under the sink, in the linen cupboard, in the rubbish bin, in the garden, under the house. And then I couldn't remember where they were to try and get rid of them so my husband wouldn't find them. You know, he would eventually find them and line them up on the bench so that when I got up in the morning I saw them, and I used to think, well, what an arsehole you are. not thinking I had the problem. You know, I thought, well, you know, like Andy said, I drank because I thought, you know, that I had problems and that's why I drank. But eventually I got to the point where I physically and mentally couldn't do it anymore, and I rang AA and went to my first meeting. And I guess for me, I never wanted to go AA at first, because I guess at the back of my mind I realised I was an alcoholic, but I knew that if I was an alcoholic, probably the answer is don't drink. And that's not what I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear, well, perhaps I could control it, and I couldn't. I couldn't control my drinking. I couldn't have one or two like normal people. I had to have, just carry on till I passed out. So when I went to AA, a whole lot of people, when they shared my feelings. Nobody had ever done that before, because I sort of had thought processes that weren't quite normal until I walked into this room. And when these people talked, I thought, that's how I feel. That's what I think. And it's the first time anybody's able to put my feelings into words. So that's why I went back, just to hear what they had to say again. And, you know, I thought, oh, God, I think I'm an alcoholic. You know, it was like someone turned on a little bloody light switch, and I had to go through the steps. And that's where I learnt, for me, was the turning point, is that I had a mental and physical allergy to alcohol. And mentally would start in the head, and that's not a good place to be. That would tell me, I need a drink, everything's wrong, I can't cope, I'm having a panic attack, so I'm going to bloody die of a heart attack. God, I can't cope, I need a drink. And then, you know, that's the mental thing in my head. And then eventually I would concede to that thought, pick up the drink, have one drink, and then that sets off the craving. You know, I'd have that drink, and then I'd think, oh, God, that's what I needed. That instant relaxed, oh, yes, now that's just what I needed. Now I can think my way straight and have another one. And, oh, yes, from the time I got to the third one, I was then going to, you know, be the Prime Minister of New Zealand, you know, or a bloody singer or a dancer, or I was going to be someone fantastic, because I had all the answers. And, you know, by the time I got to number 7 or 8, I forgot what I was doing. You know, the whole bloody thing didn't work, and, you know, the Prime Minister went out the door and so did the ballerina and whatever, and I became this piss person that abused people, picked up the telephone, and then, passed out, and the kids put me to bed. And that was it. You know, that's where I ended up. Today I don't do that. You know, today, by doing the steps of the 12 steps, you know, going through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my life. And it's a program I have to work at. And I'm grateful, more than grateful, for what I've got. You know, I no longer do those bizarre things. I haven't had to have a drink for over 9 years. And I do that one day at a time. And I don't obsess about alcohol anymore. I don't have to think about it, because that's all I did. When can I drink? Where can I hide it? Where can I buy it? You know, how can I pretend I'm sober? That's been taken away from me. And all I have to do is keep coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous, practicing the 12 steps and passing this message on the best way I can. So I'm grateful to be here, and yeah, thanks for that. That's me.
Thanks, Lydia.
Thanks for
this. You're listening to Wellington Access Radio, 7:03 a.m. This is Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. And we've got one person to go with to share their experience, strength and hope. So, Emily, would you like to share?
Sure. Hi, my name's Emily and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Emily.
It's really good to be here. It's really good to hear everybody's story again. That's part of my home group, as we say, because I relate. And that's something that I didn't do for all of my life before, really, which is a big thing to say, I think, about life. Yeah, I'm 36 years old. I am 7 years, 11 months and 1 week sober, just for today. And this is my second sobriety. My first sobriety lasted about 6 months. So I was actually at Lynette's first meeting, and I'd be over 9 years sober, you know, if I had continued on. But that's not my journey. I was about 25, 26 when I came to my, I can't exactly remember, I think more like 26 when I went to my first AA meeting. I lived in Island Bay in Wellington. I had a small child who was 4, and I had a committed partner. And, you know, I'm just a white young woman, shouldn't have too many problems, and yet felt like the entire world was dragging me down, and I was going down with it, and I was had absolutely no idea what my problem was, but I knew that there was a very deep problem within me. And I was doing things like calling up the Samaritans at odd times, just overwhelming tears and things like that, because I didn't know what was actually going on. And what I came to learn after coming to my first AA meeting is that I was really suffering from alcoholism, and that it sits in your mind regardless of your drinking or not. I first picked up a drink, I think, I didn't really know I was picking up a drink, but I drank, I had a lot of watermelon soaked in vodka as a 6-year-old at my grandfather's 60th birthday, and I loved that stuff, man. I just went back to that table like 10 times. And Grandma was like, oh, you're getting a bit tipsy, you know. and that was it, you know. But I really picked up a drink when I was about 15, and I grew up in Hawke's Bay. The drinking age was 21, and that did absolutely nothing for us getting access to alcohol. It was a more, almost like part of the deal. And the first night I got drunk, I got quite drunk, paralytically so. And quite, smoked. In Hawke's Bay, it was very, very normal to smoke weed and drink, and I had both of those, and I passed out and carried on when I woke up, you know. Puked up, carried on. And I think it was part of, like, a coming-of-age thing, and I just thought that was normal. And that started up a cycle of, like, maybe every other weekend, and then every weekend, and then more, and because you're a teenager, that's just, it felt like the most normal thing. I feel like I was quite lucky. I grew up in a with the same set of people, really, for like 12 years. I went to school with all the same people. So I had a certain amount of safety within my circle, that we did care for each other, but I got up to all kinds of business that you... very experimental for the next few years, you know. And between the ages of 15 and 21, I managed to go around the world. I managed to drink my way around the world. I got on, saved up babysitting money, got on a plane to Australia, came off drunk, spent the next year and a half drinking daily. And and I think it's not normal to just go to a random party where you don't know anybody and then come back with other people's boyfriends. Those kinds of things are happening. It was getting pretty chaotic, so I have quite a reputation outside of New Zealand for the short period of time I lived overseas. And but I felt like I could finally kind of let go of the shackles of maybe being a nice drinker. I just... 1 minute to go. 2 minutes to go. Oh, man, I better hurry up. Basically, what I want to say is that that kind of chaos went into my 20s, and then I had a child at 21, and it didn't change. But what I tried to change was I tried to control my drinking. My drinking, I didn't know was actually controlling me. My alcoholism, as it were, was controlling me. So I rang a lady who I knew could help me. She said, if you're having a problem with your drinking, maybe you should go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, go away. I don't really need you in my life. And she was right. It was my Achilles heel. I thought, you don't touch it. You know, I went to a meeting, finally managed to get myself to a meeting. And in that meeting, my life completely changed on its head. I related to two Māori guys who were the opposite of me, and that's one of the most wondrous things about AA, is that it's all walks of life, not just young women or old men or derelicts from the street. Anybody could be affected by this and in deep pain, and you won't know that, you know. And I went and I related, as I did today, and I listened and I heard what we call the language of the heart. And just like Lynette had said and other people have said, I related to what they're talking about with their feelings, and I learned how to work with somebody. I called this woman every day, and I just didn't drink for that day, and I did what was suggested, and I have a totally different life. I have a totally, totally different life. I have a lot. I lost a lot of things because of my drinking, but I think what I gained was myself, and I hadn't had that in years, so... Yeah, my family are grateful I don't drink, and my friends are constantly baffled by this whole situation, but to say that what was I like before, I was carnage, actually, chaotic carnage before, and I'm quite different now, and I'm so pleased, yeah, so thank you for listening.
Thanks, Emily. You've been listening to Wellington Access Radio, 783 AM, and thanks to the guys from Wednesday Night Steps and Traditions for coming in and sharing your experience, strength and hope. I'll just give a quick rundown of our the contact details for AA, which is aa.org.nz, which is the website, and the phone number, which is 0800 229 6757. So if you've been listening and you're affected in any way by anything you've heard and you want to get in touch with AA, those are the two best ways to do it. And you can also listen to us on podcast as well. So AA on Air Wellington is what you search for. So if I'd like to get you all to join me now to close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer, that'd be great. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.